bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. 90.7 FM, WHOS Stores. I am Peddler Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 380, to be broadcast January 31st, 2024, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch.
Hi.
If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment. We should be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you are listening on Facebook Live, you can comment right down here below on our Facebook page, or you can email me at bicycletalk@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's rant of the week. Are you a mileage junkie, or do you prefer hours? So I'm going to talk a little bit about that a little more in the show. I'm an hours kind of guy. I'm one of those guys who, you know, people say, so how many miles do you ride in a year? And I just kind of look at him and shake my head. So I don't know. I just ride, you know,
hours.
10 or 12 hours a week. That's what I do. And it's a lot. It's a fair amount. And we'll talk a little bit more about it later on the show. But that's one of my rants. The other rant is, it's not really a rant. It's a very sad day in the cycling world. For those of us who have been around the New England bicycle racing scene for many, many years, there was an icon of New England cycling by the name of Dick Ring, and he passed away back on the 24th of January. And so we're going to do a farewell to cycling legend Dick, as I used to call him, Ding Ding Ring. He's a legendary race announcer, and he's everything good about the sport, New England and beyond. Many positive comments about Dick, and we'll get into that a little bit later in the show. On a positive side, your latest indoor cycling class or routine. You're doing it, right? Good for you. So the question is, how many hours should cyclists ride for fitness and performance, which was brought me back to my rant about hours versus miles. I just know so many people that are obsessed with their miles, and, you know, they have to get X number of miles in every year, or else they're, you know, just, I don't know what the problem is there. I'm still not quite aware. I like to ride my bike because I like to ride my bike. And that's kind of more of what I'm looking at. So if I go out for a ride and it lasts for 2.5 hours, I had a nice ride. Maybe I went out for a ride and it only lasted for an hour. And that was a nice ride. It doesn't really matter how, you know, many miles you go. Plus, it's all relative. And it comes down to if I go out and ride for an hour and I am down in what we call the River Valley, which is down in the Hartford region, I can get a lot more miles in an hour than I can if I ride back here by my house, because it's really
flat.
Hilly here, and it's really flat there.
Right.
So miles don't matter. To me, that makes all the reason why miles don't matter. So anyway, I'm definitely more of an hours guy than a miles guy. But we'll talk a little bit more about how many hours should cyclists ride for fitness and performance a little later in the show. And I missed on one last week. I had talked about in my positive side of how small cities are winning big money for street safety, and we never got to it because, you know, I went babbling on about something else, because I do that here. It's Bicycle Talk. This is what we do. And in the This Will Go Nowhere department, okay, you ready? San Francisco's State Senator Scott Wiener announced two bills on Wednesday that could go a long ways towards making streets safer. Okay? SB 961 would require all cars and trucks sold in California after 2027 to have speed limiters and governors. As you can see, and This Will Go Nowhere department. From the senator's release on the announcement, Senate Bill 961 requires changes to vehicles directly, including a first-in-the-nation requirement that all new vehicles sold in California install speed governors, smart devices that automatically limit the vehicle's speed to 10 miles an hour above the legal limit. You know, great idea. Great idea. That's going nowhere, like I said. And that falls into, and this will go nowhere department. You think that you're going to be able to control people's speed in their vehicles and you can't even get gun laws passed? Don't even start. Forget it. It's not going to happen. But that's all right. I just had to, you know, I had to go there because I thought it was amusing. And like I said, it'll go nowhere. And in the If We Have Time department, I have 92 famous bicycle quotes, the best bike ride captions ever. But again, that may come towards the end of the show. If I run out of time, then I can go there. But there's a lot of fun little quips in there, including Big Al Einstein's famous quote. But that's a teaser. That's a teaser. But of course, this and more in the show. And then the Mechanical Minute and Cycling Tips. Remember last week I talked to you guys about looking over your fleet and, you know, seeing what needs to be attended to over the wintertime while times are slow at the local bike shop. Well, tick-tock, the time clock is running. We are now at the end of January. So you've wasted a perfectly good month in not looking at your bike and or having someone look at your bike, and your local bike shop is awaiting your visit. So just a reminder, that's all. I don't have anything else for my Mechanical Minute and Cycling Tip this week, so we're just going to leave it at that. I'm just here. I'm just the messenger. That's all. Just the messenger. And moving on to content, and we're going to go right into Richard Dick Ring. So, in a statement released online, the New England Bicycle Racing Association said, "It is with great sadness that we share the news of passing of a New England legend and New England Bicycle Racing Association Hall of Famer Dick Ring. Anyone who raced cross, road, track in the last 30 years would have known the would have done so in the presence of Dick on the mic." So there's a bunch of little things here. I'm just going to go over it just to talk a little bit more about Dick Ring, because if you are a New Englander and you have spent any time on a bicycle at a bicycle race, you totally know this guy. He was truly one of the I guess he falls into that grandfather of cycling in New England that occasionally Richard Freese talks about, but I sometimes fall into that too. So I thought I had an obituary here for him. Yes, I do. So I'll just give you the rough idea here. Yes, and so anyway, there is going to be a calling hour for him and a funeral for him, but I just want to go over the life of Dick Ring because he's such a classic guy here in New England. Everybody should know that Dick Ring was born in Pittsfield, Mass on May 20th, 1934. He was the son of the late Harold and Evelyn Davin Ring. He graduated from Brighton High School in the class of 52 and later served in the U.S. Army, where he competed for the U.S. Army cycling team. Shout out to Pat Bowe, by the way. His professional journey led him to become a skilled pipe fitter with Union Local 537. He was a nationally ranked competitive cyclist and speed skater, earning a spot at the Olympic alternate as an Olympic alternate in both sports in his career. Renowned as the voice of New England, Dick became an announcer for bike races, leaving a lasting impact on the cycling community. He was a passionate promoter of both cycling and speed skating. Together with his longtime friend Bill Farrell, Dick co-owned the New England Cycling Academy to teach new riders the fundamentals of cycling and proper training techniques. He led regular weekend training rides with the members of his cycling club, the Northeast Bicycle Club. He also routinely maintained outdoor speed skating tracks on local lakes and ponds where he trained with other skaters for the community. As a father, grandfather, and cherished member of his neighborhood, he spent a lifetime encouraging and fostering the athletic pursuits of young people in his life. He was an avid athlete and an outdoorsman. He found great joy in hiking, fishing, skiing, skating with his children and grandchildren. He continued to pursue his love of speed skating and cycling into his 80s. Okay, so, and then there's all the, you know, survived by and all that, and I'm not going to go over all that, but I am going to just a final note. He'll be remembered for his dedication to the community, his achievements in cycling and speed skating, his lasting impression as the voice of New England. His warm kindness and genuine smile were infectious to everyone he met. He leaves behind cherished memories and legacy that will endure in the hearts of those who knew him. Life is a journey. Make sure you enjoy the ride. So anyway, that's the obit on him. But I've got more. I've got a lot more. So we've got some other stuff here I just kind of want to go over here that is just all about Dick. He's an iconic racer and voice of the sport. He passed away just, I think he just turned 90, and his wife had died just like days earlier. It's kind of weird. But then again, they've been together forever, and sometimes that happens. So, everybody knows Dick because he was the guy who was ringing the bell at the races. He was the guy who was saying, "Hey, it's Preem, time for a Preem." And he would be, he'd ask people in the crowds as they were standing on the side of the road watching the race, to, you know, "Come, give me a dollar, you know, bring up some money here." And he'd get people in the crowd to hand over dollar bills, and he'd have cash prizes for Preems in the race. It was really cool. And, you know, he was just like such a character, too. He kind of wore a funny little hat, and he was just, but he was just a brilliant guy. I have, if you look at my Bicycle Talk Facebook page, you will see a couple of different referenced videos to him. Certainly worth watching. Definitely worth watching, because he just made cycling fun, you know. And Dick Ring was all about cycling, and cycling was way better for it. He was just that guy who would get you so excited to be watching the race, and knowing, you know, he knew all the athletes. He was really good about picking people out in the crowd and, you know, talking about them, telling stories. Guy could tell stories like you would not believe. Just a great, great storyteller. So pretty cool guy. And his passion for the sport was infectious, as he played a significant role in shaping the local cycling scene. So anyway, that's one piece that I have on him. But there's more if I could just find. So there are some videos, and I put one out, which is, there's a whole bunch of Dick Ring Part 1, and it goes through a number of different parts there. And Alan Cody put an introduction to Dick Ring. That one is on my Facebook page, along with another one. So you can kind of check that out and see what you think. And I'm going to play it for Fran tonight, and let's see if I can get her interest in it. She doesn't really know who he is, so it doesn't really matter, but it does to me. So it's kind of, you know, I feel bad that he has passed. So anyway, let's find this other little piece here, because this is really, there's some good stuff out there. And that is not it. That is not it. Okay. So there's a group called The Pace Line. It's a forum group, and it's called The Pace Line. And they have a number of comments on this. And that is not the one I was looking for. And in their comments, they have a thread page here. And this should be it right here. Here we go. So everybody had something to say about Dick, because he was that character. And if you go to the Pace Line forum in the general discussion page section of it, you will see RIP Dick Ring, legendary race announcer. And there's all sorts of different magazines that had written about him, cyclingmagazine.ca, article about him in 93 from itolman.org. If you you can see a two-part documentary on Vimeo, which is about Dick Ring, and a long interview with him on YouTube. So that's it's all really, really good stuff. So a lot of people put this out there. One of the senior members of this forum says, sorry to hear that. He was a legend. I'm sure my friend Shelley Lutz would be at his funeral. She came into racing late and took some of Dick's training camps to became a crit monster and a good buddy of his, too. And E. Ritchie, that would be Richard Sachs. And he said, I've known Dick for 50 plus years. He's everything good about the sport in New England and beyond. He's interviewing me after one of the better finishes in the Killington stage race. And there was Dick with his little hat on and interviewing Richard Sachs. Shout out to Richard Sachs. Nice bike. Okay, so anyway, a lot of comments, but when I'm going down, I'm going to go down to the point because it gets really good. Back in 73, a friend and I cycled from Worcester, Mass. To my grandmother's house in Amesbury, Mass., and I was 15, 16 at the time. It was our first longer overnight. About a halfway there, we met up with his team, and of course, the leader of the legend himself, he told his team to slow a bit and then spin. Of course, over a number of miles, he rode next to us, coached us on correct spin techniques, general riding in the pack. He became that one ride father figure to me, and needless to say, I'll never forget. So you used to love going to Fitchburg just to hear him shout out, allez, allez, prime, prime. Life well lived. Good, Godspeed, Dick, and on. But one of the other senior members here, and a friend of mine for a number of years, as I met Mark when he was just a teenager, and he and his brother Frank were coming out to the cyclocross race when they were just juniors, and they went on to become very, very well accomplished cyclists in their day. So he has a number of comments here, and some of them are just too much fun, so I had to go there. Anyone who has been to a race announced by Dick Ring will be familiar with these expressions. A race within a race, that's what he would call a breakaway, right? A fin a sawbuck, all right? That's when he was trying to get dollars up for his preams. Katie bar the door. I don't remember what Katie bar the door meant, but anyway, that's something else he would say, and most iconic of them all, and here it goes, and I don't know why he said this, but he said it all the time, Lord love a duck. Thanks, Mark. Those are good. Those are great. So Dick Ring and several of his buddies formed the Northeast Bicycle Club in 1956, which is currently the oldest USAC club in New England. I've been a member of the club since the 1990s, and although Dick had stepped back from running the club by then, he still contributed to it. I especially remember the weekly sprint training series he ran at Fort Devens in the 90s and the 2000s. Fort Devens is still an active Army base then, but Dick apparently knew the base commander and got permission to hold these weekly races on the loop at the base. I can still remember having to stop at the guardhouse at the gates and being asked by a guard what my business there was. And I would say, I was there for the bike race, and after seeing me in my cycling kit and the bike on the back of the car, the guard would signal me through. I've had many races announced by Dick where he seemed to know every racer in New England by name. He'd often tell the spectators a little story about every racer he knew. And if he didn't know a story about a particular racer, he'd make one up on the spot. I'm sure the race he most enjoyed announcing was NEBC's annual Kids Crit, where he'd be shouting encouragement to all the kids racing, regardless of whether they were in first place or last place. I haven't seen much of Dick in the last few years, but it wasn't long ago that he was, when he was in his late 80s, that I ran into him out on his bike some miles from his hometown. He was still as gregarious as ever, chatting about his recent riding and wishing me well before pedaling off again. Godspeed, Dick. Thank you, Mark. Thanks for your comments. Really cool. Just an iconic guy to remember. You cannot have raced in New England over the last 20 or 30 years without knowing who Dick Ring was. Anyway, rubber side down, wind at your back always. Rest in peace, Dick. Okay, next I will go on to something that I had passed over last week, and it was about how small cities are winning big money for street safety. And so we had I guess I must have run out of time. That must be what it was. But anyway, we're going to go there right now and just chatter about that just a little bit. And this is kind of interesting because small cities are drawing disproportionately large grants for street safety and sharing their secrets for how others can follow their lead. So this came from Streets Blog back on the 22nd of January, and it's talking about how, it starts out with for nearly 7 years, a small Georgia community had been haunted by the unsolved killing of a four-year-old who was struck by a hit-and-run driver when she walked to school and with a relative. Now it's one of the growing number of small cities and towns that are winning major federal dollars to save lives like hers and sharing the recipe for how they beat the bigger and better resource cities for their funds. In December, Clarkston, Georgia, became one of 385 U.S. communities to win a Safe Streets and Roads for All grant, earning $1 million to develop a comprehensive street safety plan. That's an unusually large victory for a city of just 14,500 people with a median income one-third lower than the national average. And it could prove an unusually impactful one, considering that Clarkston has the annual traffic fatality rate roughly double the national average, not to mention the unusual large refugee population, many of whom arrived to the United States without cars, jobs that pay well enough to buy them, or even the language skills to necessarily read American street signs. So it's known both as the Ellis Island of the South and the most diverse square mile in America. Clarkston has identified as a good fit for an international asylum programs in the 1990s and 2000s after half the residents were born outside the U.S. Students at local schools originally hail from more than 50 different countries. So including the young woman who had been emigrated from Burma, and her story became the centerpiece of the city's grant application. So what's happening here is it seems that, if you got a good story, that there's some grant money out there. And this is where I bring back that advocacy part of the show that I like to talk about, and how if you really want to make your streets safer, you got to get out there, you got to get active, and you got to make some noise. You know, do your research and show up and make some noise, because these grants are available, and you don't have to be New York City to get them. So that's kind of an interesting piece here, and it was in Streets Blog, and that's why I wanted to bring it up, because there's good possibilities of making your community a lot safer community if you just put a little effort into it. So they're building confidence in America's small towns, and the dollars are starting to flow. The federal dollars are starting to flow. So this is the time to take a look at it and see what you can do. So little shout out to little guys that are making it big. That's a good thing, always a good thing. And we're going to move on to, oh yeah, we got some more stuff here. America's Best New Bike Lanes. This is kind of interesting. Also a Streets Blog. All right. This came out just a few days ago. And yeah.
That's NYC.
Yeah, it is NYC. You can see by the backdrop on this photo here. These are the best of the best in America. We wish there were 1,000 entries on the list, but alas, there were only 20. That's a little scary, isn't it? Okay, so anyway, this is a post that originally appeared on People for Bikes, and it's reprinted from People for Bikes with their permission to talk a little bit about where the big bike lanes are in the U.S. And street number one is Broadway, New York City. Yeah. All right. After car-free streets took the top spot in last year's list, we are delighted to witness locales like New York City continuing to adopt more of these low-stress environments for cyclists. Launched in March, New York City's much-anticipated vision for Broadway is beginning to transform the iconic street with pedestrian plazas, inviting outdoor dining structures, planters, and bike improvements, with a stretch between West 25th and 32nd Streets being reshaped in 2023, while the full vision includes a people-centric Broadway connecting Union Square to Columbus Circle. The city's next phase is on the horizon, and with planned improvements, will be underway between West 33rd and 21st Streets. So that's kind of cool. The second one on the list here is 156th Street cycle track, Redmond, Washington. And there's, if you go on to the site Streets blog, you will be able to see pictures of these, and it's really, really impressive. So this one is a two-way cycle track, is what they're calling it, and it improves access to the Redmond Technology Station, part of the Sound Transit's East Link extension, and it's in Redmond, and the long-standing home of Microsoft corporate campus. So pretty cool. Number three is West 300 West Salt Lake City. And then Salt Lake City has, again, another beautiful bike lane, two-way bike lane that you can, it's 10 feet wide, two-way, which is really nice. They made it wide enough, which is really good. And it's funded by Funding Our Future Bond, which showcases Salt Lake City's commitment to prioritizing biking as a sustainable and accessible mode of transportation while fostering greener and safer corridors for all road users. Special project features include raised sidewalks and bikeways and at all non-signalized intersections, bike counters, wayfinding signage, and green-tinted concrete. Here comes another one back up here into the northeast, Inman Square in Cambridge, Massachusetts. After 2.5 years of construction, the Inman Square project in Cambridge reached its much-anticipated completion in 2023, featuring a sidewalk-level bike lane and protected intersections, shorter crosswalks, and a vibrant new plaza. Serving as a pivotal crossroad for various modes of transportation, these enhancements further Cambridge's dedication to Vision Zero and demonstrate the power of their cycling safety ordinance, which propelled Cambridge to score to a score of 58 in the People for Bikes and City Ratings programs. As evidence of its high quality, the project made headlines earlier this year after a social media video seemingly showcased the bike infrastructure in the Netherlands, and it went viral only to be revealed as a playful deception filmed in Cambridge's Inman Square. Yeah. So there it is. And then they go on and on. Minneapolis, Bryant Avenue South in Minneapolis is another one. Another one of those nice 10-foot wide beautiful bike lanes, and it has, this one has actually helped Minneapolis become the best large U.S. city in this year's ratings for bicycling in the U.S. Union Plaza in Pasadena, California is another one. There's a whole list of these things. There are 20 of them listed. I'm not going to go through all 20 today because it'll just take too long to get through them all. But I will run through a few more of the towns. So we got Pasadena, California, Boulder, Colorado, Tierra Verde, Florida, East Main Street, Rochester, New York, of all places. Who would have guessed? Avenue B in San Antonio, Texas, Salem Avenue, Dayton, Ohio, and 12th Avenue South in Nashville, Tennessee, Turner Avenue, Grand Rapids, Michigan. And these are all beautiful. When you take a look at them, you see how nicely they're done. There's some great landscaping done around them, protective barriers so that, you know, cars can't drive into the bike lane without doing severe damage to their vehicles. It's really wonderful. Agawam, Massachusetts, of all places. I would not have expected Agawam on this list. Santa Monica, California, and Jackson, Mississippi. And again, we go further on. Belmont Avenue in Chicago is another one on the list here. West Marginal Way in Seattle, and North Manhattan Avenue in Manhattan, Kansas. So those are your big top 20 right there. There aren't a lot of them, but there they are, and they're the best new bike lanes in the United States for 2023, by the end of 2023. So good stuff, definitely good stuff. Nice to see. You know, it would be nice to see a lot more of that, but we're getting there. Like I say, one baby step at a time. And eventually, as people become more and more aware of the fact that bicycling is truly a sustainable and healthy and safe way to transport yourself. I said safe with a little bit of a sigh because it's not super safe right now with the type of other modes of transportation that are out there sharing the roads with us. But it can be. It can be. That's my whole point. It can be. It can be a lot safer than what it is already today. So it's a good thing. So let's see. Let's go back to what we started our show with here in the very beginning. And how many hours should cyclists ride for fitness and performance? We'll get back to that. I'm just going to give you some cycling metrics to kind of live by. So a lot of times people talk about, especially at indoor cycling classes like the ones that I teach all day long, they go, you know, well, you know, how hard is hard? And what level is this? So when I teach my classes, I usually teach at a level of moderate resistance is called, I also use heart rate, and I also use effort levels, wattage levels, that sort of thing as reference points. But I saw this and I had to copy and paste it because I thought it was really funny in some ways, kind of funny. So cycling metrics to live by. I better determine vigorous than your speed is by the following effort scale. So someone was asking, well, how much? What is vigorous? What do you mean vigorous? So I'm supposed to ride in a vigorous level? What the heck is vigorous? So here we go. Number one out of 10. Sitting on the couch. That means you're not doing anything at all, okay? Number two, I could do this all day long. Okay, that's a nice easy level. Number three out of 10, I could still do it all day, but now I'm kind of feeling that. So I'm going to call that one the flat road ride. I'm going to call that somewhere between 2 and 10 and 3 and 10 is sort of your what I call the flat road ride. From that point, I go to, and I call that moderate resistance. Moderate resistance then goes to, wait a second, Don Rogers. The phrase, Katie, bar the door, means watch out, secure the door, because trouble is on the way, according to online references. Very nice. Thank you, Don. That's great. So trouble is on the way. Must be that, you know, somebody's getting chased down in the bike race. I don't know how he referred to it, but that's thanks, Don. Thanks for the reference. Appreciate that. So let's go back to our cycling metrics to live by. 3 out of 10, still could do it all day, but now you're feeling it. Okay. 4 out of 10, feeling it, but could carry on still an animated conversation. So I call that comfort. I call that moderate hard. And that's when you're pushing it up a little bit higher than that flat road ride, and you're looking for, I call it about 70% of your max. And so you're starting to breathe hard, you're starting to feel the ride a little bit, you're starting to feel like you're getting warmed up into it. And then that's really kind of goes back and forth between the 5 out of 10 here on this list, which is still speaking in full sentences. Yeah, kind of still, yeah, you're still there. But then you get to 6 out of 10, and you got to take a breath mid-sentence. Or I like to call 6 out of 10 comfortably hard. Comfortably hard is that place that you could ride there all day long, but you are breathing hard, and you are working hard, and you do know you have a pair of legs underneath you, and you do know your heart and lungs are doing their best in the background. So I tend to call comfortably hard more of a three-word sentence, like, this is fun, or not for me, or whatever you want to call it. But I can think of other things that I've said in spin class just to get some laughter out of folks. But
which one is tempo?
Hate You, Ron is another one that comes out. That's when Martin's in my class. That's pretty much tempo. It's going to be, you know, comfortably hard is really, if you're scientifically looking at this, it's your FTP. It's your fitness threshold. It's the way that you are mostly, pretty comfortable on the bike, and you can handle it for a long time, but you're going to be working off of that number. So comfortably hard is a very important place to be, as far as I'm concerned. And I look at it as being somewhere.
Actually, tempo is harder. It's 80 to 90%.
Yeah, 80 to 90 is, yeah, that's what I was gonna say. I kind of goofed up on the tempo part. So anyway, you're comfortably hard, so you are working and you are able to sustain it for a while. And I run a lot of my classes off of that number as a base, and I
tempo.
Work on it like that. Hold on, Fran. And then we move on to our next level, and it says here, 7 out of 10 can get out 3 words at a time. I tend to find that to be also somewhere in the comfortably hard range. But so you're really looking at FTP below tempo. And then when you go 8 out of 10 can get 1 word out, now you're in what you're referring to as tempo, friend. And 9 out of 10, no use to even bother trying to talk. I call that uncomfortably hard. And you're going over 80% of your maximum at that point. And, you know, you're definitely pushing yourself or have pushed yourself into an anaerobic state. So the bottom line of that is, and why I call it uncomfortably hard, is it's a place you can't sustain for an extended period of time. And then if you hit 10 out of 10, you're just completely maxed out. You're in zone 5 and you're... it says here, you feel close to a heart attack. I wouldn't say you'd feel close to a heart attack, but you are definitely putting out an extraordinary amount of effort. So vigorous would be, and going back to the vigorous explanation, would be 6 out of 10 or higher. And so, yeah, that's your comfortably hard or higher. And that would be vigorous. And you really only need... How much is that? What are they saying now? 40 minutes a day? Is that what they're saying, Fran? Is that the latest stats that are out there?
For what?
For cardiovascular exercise. Vigorous exercise.
No, it's something like...
you have to come closer to the mic for me,
please. I think it's something like 75 minutes a week.
Yeah.
It's different. It's like 150 it's minutes gone a week up, moderate though. And 75 minutes a week of vigorous.
Right. It has gone up, though. It definitely has gone up. So from what the standards used to be. So they are now encouraging, if you look at the medical crew out there. They are all encouraging a little bit more cardiovascular exercise than we had previously been encouraged to do in the past. So that's just a thing. But so how many hours should you ride your bike for fitness and for performance? Well, it's kind of a debatable point, but it really comes down to what are you trying to accomplish? And the best number of weekly training hours depends on your goals. So if your goal is health and cardiovascular fitness, then we're looking at somewhere between 150 and 300 minutes a week of moderate intense exercise, or 75 to 150 minutes per week if you're looking for higher intensity efforts. So since cycling is typically a mixed intensity activity, 3 to 5 hours a week is a good starting point for your general health and cardiovascular fitness. Once you want to improve your performance and you're looking for a little bit more and you want to win the, Tuesday night world championship group ride or whatever it is that you're doing, you got to start looking a little bit more like, 6 to 10 hours a week on your bike. And that'll get you prepared for the vast majority of cycling events. And, which includes, as much, cyclocross or, maybe a training race, if you want to try a training race, or maybe you're going to do a local time trial, that sort of thing. Looking at 6 to 10 hours a week on your bike. And then there's, if you're looking to do 2 to 3 hour events, then, yeah, you got to have at least that 6 to 10 hours is what they're saying here on this particular article. And this is from, by the way, this is from a Carmichael training camp site. So it's from CTS, just so you know. Winning competitions. Training more than 10 hours a week becomes advantageous when your goals are to be at the pointy end of a competitive peloton. You can win a criterium or the city speed limit sprint on 6 hours a week. Yeah, you can do it, but that's not really what you're looking for. The whole premise of the Time Crunch cyclist books and programs, and that they work really well, but really 10 hours is really a minimum if you're really looking to do something like, something longer, especially if you're looking for, 100-kilometer ride or a 150 to 200-mile gravel event. You're definitely going to have to put a little bit more than that in there. So who needs to ride 10 hours or more? If we're talking need instead of want, there aren't that many amateur cyclists who need to ride more than 10 hours a week, or at least not the majority of the weeks in the year. For high-level amateur competitors and athletes preparing for ultra-distance cycling events, there will only be a limited number of weeks during the year when you need to ride more than 10 hours. This comes from Carmichael. This is kind of interesting. So it says here, a cyclist who normally can train 8 to 9 hours a week throughout the year may need to up their time to 11 to 13 hours a week for a 4 to 6 week period during about 2 or 3 months out of the year for a big event. So if you're looking at a big event, you're going to have to up your time on the bike. And you note that we are not talking miles here. We are talking, this is Chris Carmichael. He's trained some of the best from the United States that have raced bicycles. He raced bikes himself, has Tour de France background, and he's talking hours, not miles. I'm just trying to make a point here. That's what I'm trying to do. So how much stress is necessary to improve performance? Well, that's where that fine line comes in. So now you got to look at riding. There's also a minimum effective dose of training necessary to stimulate your next positive adaptation. If your training stress directed as a particular aspect of your fitness is below the minimum effective dose, then it's insufficient to cause the adaptation you're looking for. However, at the other end of the spectrum, there's a point at which adding more training stress isn't going to yield greater adaptations. Riding 15 hours a week is not as is not 1.5 times as effective as riding 10 hours a week. And riding 20 hours a week might be too much stress for your current physiology to support. So, how many hours do you have? That's really what it comes down to. You kind of have to look at the time that you have to train and how you want to train for it. So it all really comes down to time and effort that you want to put into it and the levels of effort. But when you read something by someone like Chris Carmichael here, who is the CTS founder and chief endurance officer, and you read what he has to say, it's not big on more than 10 or 12 hours a week. And so that's where I'm at right now. I'm right around that number at the moment. So it's I like to look at time more than I like to look at miles. And that is the point that I'm making from earlier and talking about why I think that a lot of people just ride their bikes too much, and they're not, as much as they love to ride their bikes a lot, and they get that, and they love to say, well, I rode 10,000 miles this year. It's not the point. It's really not the point. And the question is it good for your body? Is it bad for your body? A lot of the people I know, and I'm just saying this, and this is an observation, not a fact. It is not researched as science, but I seem to feel that a lot of the people that ride in that excessive number of mile category tend to carry a lot more weight on their bodies. Just an observation. And if that is true, then what are you doing to your body to make it so that your body wants to retain a lot of extra weight?
Stress.
It's stress. It's too much. So it's definitely something you need to look at and be careful of. Because the bottom line is, and I know I'm talking a little bit more performance on this episode, and that may or may not make people happy, may turn some people off. But my point is, and I'm going to get right back to it, is when you get on your bike, you should have a big smile on your face and have fun. And if you're not, then something's not right. Something is not right. You need to remember why you got on your bike in the first place, why you like to ride your bike. And some people like to race their bikes, and that's great, and it's really good for them. But the day that you go, old friend of mine and cycling coach for a number of people in the New England area, by the name of George Orr, used to say, if you get up in the morning and you go over and you pick up your bike and it feels heavy, don't ride it. Very simple. And it's not like it's a science of any kind, but you know, there are those times when you go, oh, I gotta go out and put in this much time on my bike today. I can't believe I have to do. Don't do it. Don't do it. If it's that big a deal, don't do it. Don't do it. Take a day off. Go for a walk. You know, walk the dog. Say hi to your significant other instead of passing them in the middle of the night because you're training too much. Whatever. You know, you'll figure it out. But you're supposed to be having fun. That's the whole idea. What's the best exercise to do, Fran?
The one you'll do.
The one you'll do. Absolutely. And the one you'll do is the one that you have fun with, right? I mean, I'm teaching a multitude of indoor cycling classes right now, and I am teaching a large portion of them. I am participating in a small portion of them. I'm trying to be smart about it and scientific about it for my own self, because I don't want to burn out from it. I also started teaching in this past year a silver sneakers class, which is a strength and movement class for folks that are 65 plus. And I got to say, it's fun. It's really a blast. I'm having a blast doing it. The folks that come to my class are all grins. They love coming there. We do so many like silly things in the class, you know, marching around the room and, you know, going back and forth and high-fiving each other. And I just make it fun. And because it's fun, they get to spend 45 minutes to an hour with me moving and doing things that they wouldn't normally do. And that's the whole secret to it, is make it fun. Make it a lot of fun. Last week in my indoor cycling classes, I did what I called a mock bike race. And I do this every once in a while. I will do this. And I actually will be teaching the class off the bike part of the time, and I set the scenario and I explain to them how they're in a big bike race and that there's going to be a breakaway and we're all going to be in the break together and we're going to work together. And then I run a mock pace line by making a rider go harder than everybody else for a short segment of time, 15 to 20 seconds, and then the next rider and the next rider and the next rider, and just kind of put it all together, encouraging the other riders that are in the class to either cheer them on or, make fun of them or whatever. Have fun with it. Just have fun, you know. Just make it a good time. So that's what I think. There are 10 cycling metrics that can help you improve your performance, too. So I don't think we're going to have time to get to all these today. So I think I'm going to move this one on and I'm going to push this on to next week. But it's an article from Celine Yeager from Bicycling Magazine. And it's about a guide to key cycling metrics that can make your rides better. And we'll go over that. She's got a bunch of ideas here about how you can have, there's 10 cycling metrics that can help you improve your performance. So I'm going to go back to this next week because I think it's an important thing. And this is all that time of year where, you know, we're sitting around a little bit more because it's winter, it's dark, the days are short. If you live up here in New England, the days are not real conducive to getting outside on your bicycle. You might be able to get outside and do other things, but up here, if you get outside and do other things, you're going to grow mold because all it does is rain these days. So we are in a very wet time of our year right now, which is a little unusual because, you know, we get kind of fake snow and then it goes away very quickly. But I guess up north they're getting more snow from what I've heard. But we're just not getting it down here. So it's just that time that you might want to take a look at where you're at and what your goals are and what you want to do. Because it is still January, so we are still talking about, you know, what are your resolutions. So we will move on to this next week and talk about it a little bit more. And I will mention a few things here. Matthew Vanderpool is eating up everything in cyclocross right now. Nobody's close to him. He's just really phenomenal on the bike. So I think it's fairly safe to say that I will be between the 2nd and the 4th of February when we have the World Championships coming up. I think it's going to be Matthew this year. It looks like it's probably going to be Matthew, unless something horrible happens to him. I don't think anybody else is anywhere near him at the moment. So that's kind of an interesting thing that's going on. Matthew is on fire. So I'm going to go on to a few more events that are coming up here too, besides the World Championships. There's Fatty Cross at Haddam Neck on February 4th, 2024, put on by our folks at the, I think that's the airline folks that are putting that on. But anyway, it's on Bike Reg, and you can check it out. And it's called Fatty Cross, and I don't know if it's Fat Tire Cyclocross or what it is. Not sure. But anyway, you might want to check that out and see. The Frozen Four begins on March 3rd. Yes, that is a training series that is 4 weeks of training races in Farmington, Connecticut. And that is coming up soon also. The Philly Bike Show Expo is going to be March 16th through the 17th, and it remains in Hall E of the Pennsylvania Convention Center. And if you're going there as a company, they are encouraging you to sign up now. People for Bikes Leadership Conference in Tucson, Arizona, March 26th through the 29th, presented by People for Bikes. And to my Australian listeners, Handmade Bike Show expands with an Australian event, which will be June 28th through the 29th at the Darebin International Sports Center in Thornbury, Victoria. And there will also be a second made show in Portland, and that will be held August 23rd to the 25th here in the U.S. The Natchog Epic, let's not forget, March 24th. It is the 20, I don't know which edition this is, but last week I had announced to you that there were 396 people pre-registered for this event of 800 cutoff, 800, 850 cutoff. It's up to 431 this morning. Yeah, this is a big deal. It's a gravel ride, 82 miles, 60 miles, 45 miles, and 32 miles. And so, yeah, if you haven't signed up yet, it's time. It's time, and I believe the 82-mile one for the men's is on wait list at the moment. So, finishing points. Farewell to Dick Ring. What a great guy. You know, he did so much. He was so inspiring for cycling throughout New England. So many people have a story to tell of Dick Ring, who told so many stories himself. And anyway, it's January, so what's that resolution? More miles, ride to commute to work or around town, better fitness, or just join bike rides where you're just slowing down and smelling the roses. So I'm going to say it again, and it won't be my last time. Get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and the lack of places to safely ride, and join the revolution of change. Hey, take a day, park the car or truck, and ride your bike instead. You might just surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not express the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this show. If you've been listening to this on Facebook Live, you can leave your comments below. If you want to reach out to me, you can reach me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org. iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. If you want to contribute information, drop me an email. This is Pedal and Run. Remember, keep that rubber side down, the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you next week. Get on your bikes and ride!